This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Professional wrestling, perhaps? I like professional wrestling. I think Chris likes professional wrestling. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins, joined as always by Christopher Robin Novembrino, named, of course, for the A.A. Milne character. I don't know where that came from. Got anything for banter, or should we just get into it?
No. The story I said I had to tell you is like totally, it's too long to do on air. Nah.
Let's really?
It's not good on air banter. I don't feel like.
Okay.
I mean.
That's right. Well, so much for that.
Well, no, you can hear it on Don't Worry About the Government. I actually do it on Don't Worry About the Government. I just feel like it's too.
That's such a great crossover plug. I'm so proud
it is.
Of you.
I'm proud of you. Which you can find it, you know, don'tworry.tv, patreon.com/DWATG. But it is like, it was kind of political, and I always try to draw a line on that stuff
gotcha.
Here.
Thank you all for your Stromboli tips. If you come through, it's like, if you want good Stromboli, go here. It's like, oh, next road trip, I will. We are sponsored this week by mybookie.ag. More about them later. Attention must be paid. Rest in peace, Reggie Parks. Belt creator, 87 years old, died from COVID complications. Most notably responsible for designing the Winged Eagle belt of the WWE World Championship. Belt famously worn by Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. Also designed the WCW Heavyweight Championship belt, the classic Intercontinental title belt. I liked his designs on tag belts quite a bit. I remember it was like the mid to late 80s tag team belts for WWF. I thought were quite good. I don't have a lot. If you go into Conrad Thompson's feed, he has pictures of all the belts that Reggie Parks was responsible for, but that dude responsible for a lot of fandom for a lot of people. A lot of people like that Winged Eagle, or as I said, Winged Eagle belt. Any thoughts on Reggie Parks and his belt creations?
Yeah, I think that Reggie Parks is one of these names that is actually more important for people's fandoms than they realize, because people really latch onto the belts. I think to like, as about, I don't know, 8-9 years ago now, but like there was one NBA championship team where they went out and they all bought heavyweight title belts and stuff. Like,
yeah,
the thing, like, even after normies eschew watching wrestling, like then they leave the watching wrestling part of their life, they still like the belt component of professional wrestling and the way that professional wrestling does belts. And I feel like the belts that you mentioned, the classic WWF Intercontinental title, the Winged Eagle belt, like the big gold belt for WCW, like those make certain impressions in people's minds. And, you know, I think that actually has a pretty big impact. And those guys go as like unsung heroes.
I am still Mr. Big Gold Belt. I do not own any title belts. Which people find unusual. It's just, it was never my thing. And it was always seemed like too much of an investment and too nerdy, but I have friends who like are lapsed fans, but they still like my friend Jarvis, I believe still has an Intercontinental title with the white strap that he hangs at his cubicle at work. I just go, okay, that's kind of cool. Kind of awesome. It was just never a thing for me. I don't know why, but I loved his designs after seeing, if you look at all the pictures of him, it's like he went for more the classiness rather than the pizzazz type thing. Like, okay, well, we're on the topic. What do you think of this TBS championship that they unveiled on Dynamite on Wednesday?
Not going to be saving up money to buy one anytime soon.
Okay. That was a little more direct than I was expecting, but, I don't like, for some reason, I don't like the idea of titles being named after the networks that they're on. I just, in case they like change networks somewhere down the road, or What's yours? You look like you're waiting for something.
No, I mean, you basically nailed it. Like, what dream does it spark in my head to own the TNT title?
I got a TBS title with a logo of a network on it.
It's like divorcing itself from the sport of it. And you were like, yeah, you're like now back into this is a network television show rather than a federation that you win big titles in. And that, you know, I mean, like, it's the way that they used to pitch wrestling is like, you know, this guy used to do boxing, but now he's in the real big leagues. He's in wrestling. Yeah. And I think that the belts go a long way to selling that sort of sport presentation.
I really liked the NWA television title of the mid to late 80s. I thought that might be a title, you know, the red belt with the red strap. I always thought that was kind of a cool belt. Yeah.
The television title's an elegant way of sort of having your foot in the door as like, this is a network TV show, but also still talking about this as like a sovereign promotion that has a television relationship with a network.
Yeah,
so it makes the show seem more like a peer.
Yeah. The history of the television belt was always that, you know, the important stuff happens on the house shows. This is your chance to have a main event match on TV, and this guy's going to defend this title on every type of thing. And I still like the idea of that, although AEW will not be doing house shows, I don't think, anytime soon. They do some here and there on big pay-per-view weekends, but I just, you know, even if it's encrusted in diamonds and it's blue diamonds for the TBS title, it's like doing the, you know, here's the Coca-Cola championship. And it's like, that doesn't resonate with me in terms of a sporting title. And it's no offense to anybody who's going to end up holding this title or the TNT championship. I think secondary titles are a necessity. That's the word you're looking for, Hawkins, to get more fans involved in the promotion and to root for, you know, more title big time matches. The marketing of it, while I like the nostalgia,
here's the point. Like the Intercontinental title evokes a certain sort of mystique to it. Like, oh, this guy goes around all over these different continents and defends this title. But the world title is defended like all over the world or whatever. Like the Intercontinental title, it's essentially the intermediate title.
Yeah, and
but
and
you found a classier way of saying intermediate.
And the secondary mystique that was then put on it back in the 80s and 90s of it being the workman's belt, with the exception maybe of Honky Tonk Man. It's one of those things where it can take on a life of its own. I just...
And I don't know that the name the TNT title or the TBS title lends itself to evoking that, like, workman's rate thing. Like, you know, I don't, 10 years from now, I don't picture going like, I want to be one of those great TBS champions.
Yep. Bobby Fish officially signed by AEW, a deal per Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, helped brokered by the Young Bucks. There was a relationship there because, look, Fish and O'Reilly were stalwarts of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, especially when I was going there. I like Bobby Fish a lot. I don't see a lot of, I mean, unless he's going to be put in a tag team, I don't see a lot of upside in terms of, he's not going to be in the big programs, but I could see him being a solid part of a stable or something. But this is a lot like signing the other guy in a tag team in many ways to me, even though that match with Sammy was really, really good. I'm not going to take anything away from Bobby Fish's talent. He's not the most dynamic promo in the world to me, but I liked the video package they did for him. I just, if he could find a different tag team partner and be kind of an ass kicking grizzled veteran type of tag team in this AEW tag division, I think it's sorely needed. I think you need that other. FTR fits the bill. But it's nice to have a second team that's kind of like that too, kind of a rough and tumble tag team to get the flippy-do guys and be a base for them.
Yeah, I would like to see Bobby Fish tag up with Kazarian.
Ooh.
That's
nice. I like that. I didn't even think of him. He wasn't even on my radar of people that I was thinking about, but that'd be a nice little team, I think.
Yeah. So I think there's a role for him. I think you're right. Like, this isn't like, push Bobby Fish to the main event or, you know, make Bobby Fish the TNT champion or something like that. No, I think that this is Bobby Fish's role is exactly what you described. And I think unless you're like the biggest Bobby Fish fan in the world, you're going to be fairly happy.
Is
and
there
not surprised.
A biggest Bobby Fish fan in the world? That's my question.
Bobby Fish has a mother, probably other members of Bobby's family.
Is it the person who framed Robert Fish? That's the question.
Who framed Robert Fish?
You know, I know that. Oh, you know what? He probably listens to the show too. It's probably that fan probably listens to the show. I'm Bobby Fish's biggest fan. Why are you making fun of me? We're not making fun of you.
One sad tear goes down that fan's face.
The meet and greet. There's that one guy who, yeah, I get to meet Bobby Fish.
Just quietly singing Bobby Fish's theme song to himself.
Look, everybody has that fan. They do. Every wrestler you can think of has that super fan, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't mean to shame them. It just sounded funny to me that Bobby Fish's biggest fan. What? Old names in new places. Ken Doan, who wrestled as Kenny Dykstra, only 35, by the way, and Allison Danger, 44, the sister of Steve Corino, have been hired as new coaches for the new NXT 2.0. Ken Doan is interesting. I saw him when he got cut after the whole Spirit Squad thing. I saw him at that Wrestling Retribution project that never got underway, but like a bunch of guys, Chris Masters was part of it. Fergal Devitt was originally supposed to be part of it. Pac was in there. Ricochet, I believe, Machine Gun, Carl Anderson, just a bunch of guys who's who doing different gimmicks. And he looked great. And then he took a couple years off to go back to college and then started to do indies around and looked great too. Had that short run when the Spirit Squad were brought back into SmackDown for a few weeks, thought they may do something with him there. Now he's only 35 and he's coaching. Look, I don't know. I think Allison Danger is a good pickup. She was always solid on the female indies and would probably be a great help to the young people there. I don't know if it's a tragedy or not. And I never judge teachers by how their careers went, because you could have low level guys be the best teachers in the world. And you can have guys like, I'll give you an example. I'm not sure Shawn Michaels is the best coach in the world. I'm going to be honest with you. I just think guys who are superstars, who are elite talents and stuff like that, much like when you get elite quarterbacks who end up becoming general managers of teams, they're more often looking for themselves than actually looking at the guys that they're coaching and coaching them up to be the best them they can be. So I'll be interested to see how they do in the system.
Yeah, I think that teaching and doing are different skill sets. I know there's that tired adage of those who can't do teach, but like the reality is also that many of those who do are actually very bad at explaining things.
Yes.
And so they can do stuff at a high level, but they can't actually explain how or why they do those things and pass on that knowledge in any sort of tangible way. And so
in improv, some of the best coaches aren't necessarily the most dynamic players in the world, but they're the people who think about it and have broken it down and have, you know, what they believe to be good improv and can explain that to young up and comers and things like that. That's not to say that good improvisers can't coach, but
information is just a different skill set than executing information, and understanding and analyzing information is a different skill set than executing information. They are not mutually exclusive, but just because you can do one doesn't mean you can do the other. And so I think about that one a lot. Like, you know, how do you pass on stuff? Oftentimes it's the stuff that you know sort of intuitively that's the hardest to systematize in a way that you can explain to someone else.
Mickey Bella has signed on to be a judge on the new NBC show America's Got Talent Extreme, along with Travis Pastrana and Simon Cowell. That's an interesting threesome. The show will showcase more outrageous acts than the regular show. More outrageous acts than America's Got Talent? You're kidding me.
I want them to go against type here, and I want Simon Cowell to be the nice one and Nikki Bella to be the one who gives the scathing, brutally realistic takes on every one
I'm
of the acts.
I'm bored by this. Get out of my
Listen, you haven't worked on this at all. You clearly are pitchy. This act is under thought, and you need to rehearse a lot more. Simon Cowell's like, I don't know, man. I think we need to let him through.
The show will be shot on location and not on a theater stage. It just means we're going to put the prissy Englishmen in outdoor settings. Well, good for her. And more TV news, because this is everything. We got old faces and new places. Adam Scherer, the former Braun Strowman, probably awaiting debuting in Impact, has been hired by NBC Sports Network as an analyst. He'll be doing the Mr. Olympia contest and World Arm Wrestling Championship. I think that's a pretty good hire.
No, that's a great hire, and this is a good move for Braun Strowman to rebuild himself as the guy that he really should be understood to be, which is like this, you know, big strong guy, big strong man.
The guy who competed in strongman competitions could do. I believe he also did some arm wrestling professionally. Don't quote me on that though, but I think that's an interesting choice. And I think he actually, if you've watched videos like the ones that he, EC3 and Drake Maverick used to do, he has personality in him. He's not just, I'm not an idiot. The Shane McMahon thing just killed him in WWE, but I do think he
You think I'm stupid.
Speaking of guys with underrated charisma, Dean Mutati, the former Mojo Rawley, has a new job as the co-host as TMZ Sports on FS1. He's also part of now the Levitard crew over at Meadowlark Media. He's been doing some drop-ins with them because he's friends with the Gronkowski family. So he and Chris Gronkowski have been doing bits for him. And I just watched his, I wouldn't call it a shoot tape, but it's close. He and Chris Hero recently sat down for an interview, and that was a lot of fun. I like the guy. I like Mojo Rawley a lot. I mean, the gimmick he was doing in NXT was cringe, but man, he was learning. He was getting better. He was never going to be a superstar with the hype thing, but I think they just never gave him the chance that he was due on the main roster. And I think co-host of a sports show, he's a smart dude. I think it'll work for him.
Yeah, I always liked Mojo Rawley. I'm with you. I didn't think the get hype, stay hype gimmick was going to get him anywhere necessarily, but there's a lot of intensity there, a lot of fire there, and a level of charisma and energy that's hard to teach. Like he does work at a bigger level than a lot of people do, and that's one of those things that's hard to teach. So like I hope. In a way, he's not done with wrestling, because I'd like to see him take another crack at it at some point.
I do, too. I'd like to see him, maybe not Impact, but like a Ring of Honor. Hell, a AEW Dark match, I think, wouldn't be that bad for him. Maybe even MLW, taking a shot there. You know, one of these smaller promotions that needs a guy. And I'd like to see him completely rework his image, you know, just... not be an Ultimate Warrior ripoff type thing, but maybe, you know, have a little bit of like use his real life brains. I mean, the guy has an MBA from the University of Maryland. He's not a slouch. I believe he walked on to that football team too. So he has the work ethic. So I'd like to see him repackaged somehow. Ronda Rousey has a new show on ESPN Plus called Rowdy's Place, where she talks to different combat sports stars, including, I believe, hockey enforcers, because she has one of those up there from the LA Kings. There will be at least two episodes on pro wrestling during season one. One will be Kurt Angle, who, as you might recall, won a gold medal with a broken friggin' neck. And the other will be on ECW. This one's interesting. I don't find Ronda Rousey to be a compelling media presence at all. I think she and who would I liken her to? Danica Patrick. Who is kind of trying to grow a podcast brand. Now, those two were so hyper-focused athletes that their personalities were all through their sports. And so they don't seem to me to be compelling interviewers other than, hey, you're a high-level athlete. I'm a high-level athlete. we're both intense. Let's talk about that for a while.
Yeah, so this actually, I think, almost gets back to the teaching thing, right? Like, you can perform at a high level, but just because you can perform at a high level doesn't mean that you can present at a high level. So you might have had a very interesting life driving race cars and doing all these things in car racing world or in mixed martial arts world. But you might not be particularly good at telling a story or understanding like the ebbs and flows of a conversation, how to make that good. And an editor, of course, like, and all these people will be heavily edited and, you know, coddled well by their editors. An editor can smooth that out a little bit, but at the end of the day, if you're not that interesting on a microphone, you're just not that interesting on a microphone. It's hard to teach someone how to be able to, like, listen to what someone else says and come up with a quick joke on the fly or something like that. You either have that or you don't. And that's hard to teach, even if you're a good teacher.
I think I have that, but sometimes the comments tell me different.
I never read the comments. So.
I never read the comments, exactly. And we'll end the news with the WWE draft wrapped up this week. Draft talk, winners, losers.
I love
your
the draft.
Phone calls, 1-800-SHAKE-ROPES. 1-800-SHAKE-ROPES. Chris from San Bernardino, hello.
Yeah, Jeff, first time, long time, as in a long time host, first time calling into the show that I host. I wanted to say that I think that SmackDown really got their ass handed to them here in this draft. Raw walked away with all the talent. All SmackDown's got is Roman Reigns, Cesaro, the Prince Devitt guy, and the Usos. And I love Carmella. Thanks. I'll listen to my response off the air.
The best thing about living in LA is Laker draft talk or Laker trade talk, where it's like, hey, can we fool that other team and send our crap players for their best? It's just every year, and because it worked one time with Pau Gasol, now it's like, hey, maybe we can trick the Sixers and they'll send us Ben Simmons. It'll be great. News and notes from the draft that interested me. Yeah, it looks like SmackDown's going to be a tough show. It's going to be a tough watch for a lot of reasons. It doesn't have a bad roster. It just doesn't have a lot of star power up top. And it's mostly the women up top that star power right now. It's Charlotte Flair and Sasha Banks. I don't know how long you can put those two together in a feud if you want to keep them apart. But Shayna Baszler's there. Tony Storm's there. Although after tonight, who knows what the hell they're going to do with Tony Storm losing in what? 2 minutes and 10 seconds to my God, that Queen of the Ring thing is a damn train wreck, but let's talk about a little draft here. No women's tag teams are left standing as they've all been broken up. Street Profits were almost broken up, almost got that victory lap, but they changed their mind at the last minute. Who were broken up? Gender Screw, as Shanky and Jinder Mahal go to SmackDown while Veer is left on Raw, which is weird. Tegan and Shotzi got broken up. Tegan going to Raw, Shotzi staying on SmackDown. Mason T-Bar are your team of choice that got broken up, which is weird, but you know what? There is the chance on Raw to have Keith Bearcat Lee, and the former, what was his name? Dominic Dijak, whatever his name, Dijakovic. I always
Dijakovic.
Dijakovic. T-Bar. they could always become a team, but yeah, this SmackDown brand has a lot of good guys who are just, they're no longer names worth pursuing upper level. Ricochet, Carrillo, Angel Garza. They kept the New Day broken up for some reason. Ridge Holland might be a good addition, but I'm surprised they didn't bring Pete Dunne with him. Congratulations on your new contract, Pete. Stay down in the minors. You know, Corbin and Madcap. The Viking Raiders are here. Mansoor and Ali were moved over here. And then the other shocking thing to me was, if you're going to make a big deal out of Gable Stevenson being drafted, maybe not so low. I think he was like one of the last picks of the night. It's like, oh my God, this was a huge thing. No, you drafted him on like the second night of the draft or the last night of the draft towards the end there. It's like, okay, it's all right. People moved over to Raw. I think Commander Aziz is the big loser here because he's on the same roster as Omos. And there's only going to be one giant on this roster that's dominant. And I don't think it's going to be Aziz, unfortunately. Drake Maverick, T-Bar, Tamina, The Miz, Veer, Zelina Vega, Carmella was put over here. Your thoughts?
I think McIntyre's over on SmackDown now, right?
Yes, it's going to be Roman and Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, it's going to be Roman and Drew McIntyre. And then I think eventually you get a Cesaro program with Roman too. But like when you're maybe the only winner on the SmackDown roster that I could immediately see is potentially Cesaro. They might try to do another push with him. But like Bloom's off the rose with that guy. Long time.
We got the New Day here and we got Hit Row. I mean, we have a pretty good
tag. The New Day without Big E is not the New Day.
You're right. You're right. They got a pretty good tag division, though, in SmackDown. If they want.
SmackDown. I mean, with the two angles here, are they might do a lot of women's wrestling and they might do a lot of tag team wrestling. Those are the two things that we know WWE is really, really good at. So looking forward to seeing this point of emphasis show that they'll be coming out with here on Friday.
There's two things that WWE is known for. It's their depth of their women's angles.
They let the women really work and really kind of explore their various styles. And every woman has a very different style. That's one thing about the WWE match. And, same thing with the tag teams. You know, like these guys.
Their care of the tag team division, what they are known for. Oh, God. Oh, that's the draft talk. Before we get into the lazy river of wrestling criticism, do our ad read today.
Absolutely, Jeff. Today's episode is sponsored by MyBookie. With over $500,000 in contest prize money up for grabs, the NFL is back in action, and so is winning season at MyBookie. Head to mybookie.ag to choose from a variety of boosts and free bets and get in on the fan favorite $100,000 super contest, which only costs $10 to enter. Pick five games against the spread each week. Each win earns you a point, and each point gets you closer to the grand prize. In order to get you started, make your first deposit at mybookie.ag and use the promo code ROPES to instantly double your deposit. That's double your money to double your winnings with your first ever deposit using the promo code ROPES. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
Thank them for our sponsorship.
We thank them for our sponsor, or we thank them for sponsoring us.
Yes. I forgot to tell Chris the code. It just says RECODE.
Promo code.
Promo code. Oh, the lazy river of wrestling criticism. What is this, kids? If you've never listened to the show, welcome. This is Shake Them Ropes. There's so much wrestling content out there that we no longer do television reviews. We just pick and choose stuff we liked until we get bored or until we're just completely out of things to talk about. So this is what this is. I will start because the best thing I saw this week, I'm going to put over Serena Deeb. I love me some Serena Deeb. Serena Deeb is fantastic. You want to know why, Chris? Because people want to cheer her and she's going to have none of it. And I love every second of it. She did this on the pre-show in that match with Thunder Rosa for the NWA women's title. She did that here with Hikaru Shida. Or Hikaru, depending on how you say it. I said it like Dasha does. Dasha says it Hikaru. It's probably Hikaru. Oprah. I loved this. I love her embracing the Dean Malenko gimmick, woman of 1,000 holds. I love that she is just nasty in terms of submissions and working over a body part. I love that she came out and immediately said, I'm going to be the heel. She took that chair, threw her back under the ring. It was great. And I loved the postscript of her taking the award and braining Sheeta in the head with it afterwards, and then doing her namaste pose, you know, because she does yoga. That's been her entire thing the whole time. She is a fantastic heel, and this was the best thing I think I saw all week.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed Serena Deeb in this match. I think, you know, you clearly see her taking mannerisms from Dean Malenko, the blue color scheme. You get like getting the Ice Woman sort of thing with
Like that if they made her the Ice Woman.
They've really been like Dean Malenko gave her the blessing and stuff, and the work in the limbs and stuff is increasingly Malenko-esque. And with that is a soft heel persona, like she's a heel. And she's icy, and, like, she used the eye rake, so, like, she's definitely, like, leaning into it. I mean, it's not so subtle messaging at this point. She is a heel. She's just not, like, an extremo heel yet, but definitely clearly on the heel side of the roster. Sheeta, for her part, I thought looked pretty good in this match, too. I kept thinking, man, if Sheeta had a gimmick that was, like, a little bit more accessible. Because I look at Sheeta's gimmick right now, and I'm not really sure what Sheeta is supposed to be.
There's a lot of early stage Bailey in Sheeta, which worries me a bit. I'm here for the fans, and I'm here to do my best, and that's it.
And she's, like, big enough, and, like yeah. She's big enough that, like, I could just see her as, like, you know, an ass kicker. And yeah. I'm kind of here for her as an ass kicker.
I kind of want to see her lose it with the kendo stick.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, but I feel like we're closer. I like this updated look more than some of her other looks. Mm-hmm. So like I feel like it's a step in the right direction, but we're not quite there. But like I like the new Deeb character a lot. I think it's good.
Your turn, sir.
Okay, so I guess I am going to talk about. Ooh, man. All right, Daniel Garcia and CM Punk. Let's just do that one. I was gonna save it, but if I'm blanking, I might as well play the card now. Yeah. I liked Daniel Garcia and CM Punk. I thought this was pretty good. You know, Daniel Garcia reminds me of like a young Bob Backlund.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, like there's a like it, he's not quite, especially with the promo he did tonight. At like CM Punk, there's a little bit like Mr. Backlund, slightly diluted thing going on with Daniel Garcia, and I like the character, and I thought like this match was just like a really nice, solid, well worked match. Punk, for his part, he is I feel like he's better now than he was like at the tail end of his last run, like even like the last year. Like he was having kind of mediocre so-so matches in the last 12 months of his last run. So I guess that'd be like 8 years ago. I think that this is a better version of CM Punk. He thinks about matches differently now. He uses more of the MMA and stuff because of the MMA training. Like he's just doing different things now.
I think what's really helped him quite a bit is the fact that he doesn't have to do the pattern. The WWE pattern, he can do a different match against different kinds of opponents. Yes, he can do a straight grapple F type match here with Daniel Garcia. And I think it's weird because it felt like at first they had to win over the crowd a little bit with it. And I think they got there with a little bit more of the hard hitting. But yeah, I liked this. I didn't love it, but I liked it. And I did love the ending. I love the Anaconda Vice being the finisher as opposed to just doing the go to sleep. Over and over. I know people wanted to go to sleep. I also need a knucklehead battle between 2.0 and the Acclaimed. I just do. I think the two of those teams need to get on a bit. Yeah, I kind of wanted to see Garcia be a little bit more on top of Punk, I think. I think Punk needed to show a little bit more ass here. Just a little bit, because he's the veteran coming back and still getting his sea legs a bit while Garcia is this killer. And Garcia's had a hell of a week this week. He had to face Punk, Alex Shelley, and then this weekend, I believe he faces both Davey Richards and Minoru Suzuki. So he's having a hell of a wrestling week. And I love the gimmick. I want a little bit more. I guess I'd put Ron Garvin in him, you know, just kind of being a little bit more sadistic about the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I would have liked to have seen him do more is like target something, a Punk a little bit more. But other than that,
I'm going to go over to the WWE for my next thing, and it's going to be about Becky Lynch. Big time Bex is a fine gimmick for her if she wants to do it. If she wants to dress like something out of Elton John's wardrobe, I'm here for this. I'm good with it. The man comes back to Blank City is a babyface line, and it's killing the heel aura about her. And that's the problem. The problem is she's the smart alky heel. She's the smarmy heel. She's the stone cold, quote unquote, heel, where she's look at these two dopes type of thing.
And she's not showing enough ass during any of it. Yeah, she never shows ass, rarely show. Like the one time it was when she had her little Orange Lassity moment.
Yes.
Other than that, one, the Orange Lassity moment, she has not shown any ass. And when she even gets kicked by Charlotte, it's by another heel. So it's not even a baby face who is delivering comeuppance onto Becky at this point.
Yeah, I think they've bailed on the heel thing with her. I do. When she goes over to Raw, she's going to be getting huge babyface pops. But they also do this with Roman. Roman did the same thing. It's San Jose, acknowledge me. And they most people cheered, but you heard a smattering of boos. Now, the one time Becky did show a little bit of ass was in the beatdown, where when Bianca gave her the kill shot. It's not the kill shot.
K-O-D.
The K-O-D. Thank you. I knew it started with a K on her and the lovely Sasha Banks. I did like the disco ball thing. That's a pretty good line. That's a heel to heel line. I can allow that. But Bianca was getting ground up by those two. Those two have such more presence than Bianca right now. And I feel kind of a little frightened. I mean, thank God she's not going to be on the same show with Charlotte, who had just talked down to her in every promo once she goes to Raw. But I don't know. Can Bianca be the top woman on Raw?
I don't know that I have seen that yet. And I definitely don't think that she has shown that to WWE management. Mm-hmm. They don't trust her.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Your move.
My move. Okay, let us talk about Jade Cargill.
Okay.
She's not good. This little match with Sky Blue was an attempt to kind of continue to cover this up, but that pump kick tonight, she didn't get it over her hips. She just needs work. And if they're gonna do a big push with Jade Cargill, maybe she's got something else in the tank and she's gonna really surprise us. But
what they did though was short and sweet, and that part was perfect.
Sky Blue should
have been crushed.
And they're covering up things.
Yes.
They're covering up things, but I guess as a trained watcher, I saw Sky Blue doing all the work in that match.
Yes.
And Jade Cargill, even in the limited amount of work being handed off to her, getting through. She's got the character down. The meme that she got last week of flipping the bird to the guy holding the sign, that's great. But at the end of the day, this is a thing that's done inside the four ropes, and
you can't do 30-second squashes forever.
No, right? Like, how do I give you a main event push, like as the women's champion or something, and the best you can deliver is like maybe a 6 and a 6.5 minute match with a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna go to NXT 2.0. Tony D'Angelo debuted. I'm not going to say he's a great wrestler by any means. He is green as goose crap, as the Southerners like to say. That said, there's something there, Chris, that I really like. He has character down. The bribing of the ref on a squash match, just in case, he has good throws. He has good amateur type throws, like the gut wrench suplexes, those types of things. It's going to be a rough, road a little bit here, but I liked him. I didn't hate him as much as I thought I would. And a lot of these guys are starting to grow on me. Bron Breakker, of course, has grown on me. The Creed brothers have grown on me. I watched that squash from 205 while I was waiting for you. Love those guys. The Diamond Mine promo video was great. Wayne Bloom's kid still is a charisma vacuum, which is disappointing in so, so many ways.
Oh, man. No, putting him and Kyle O'Reilly against each other, that's the no charisma theater. It's like my new Rey Mysterio family theater thing. It's O'Reilly and Von Wagner, like, having, like, a love, like, affair thing. You know, oh, look, can we ever be friends? I don't know, man. I've been so hurt. I want to be your friend. Yeah, but you don't know the year that I've had. Okay, but I still want to be your friend, and I respect you. Well, let's talk later.
So good. I feel bad for interrupting it with a laugh, but you just got me with the, I don't know, I've been so hurt. I'm in touch with my feelings right now, Chris.
Listen, Vaughn, you're a nice guy, and it's nice that you're being nice to me, but other people have been nice to me, and they turned out to be not nice.
But you got to understand, I have dreams. I got to go out there.
Listen, Vaughn, as a father.
Who gave me Ray's cue cards? Quick, the Kyle Bot 3000. It's become self-aware. Get it back. Get the chips in there. Oh, God.
I want to be your friend.
If someone came up to you and said that like that, and you just kind of go, oh, my God, I have a stalker. Von Wagner is a stalker. That's what it is. I want to be your friend, Kyle. I want to... Kyle, I want to be there for you. I won't be ignored, Kyle. Like, a little close and Fatal Attraction. Chris has muted himself because he's laughing.
Yeah, no, I just didn't want to like laugh all over it, but yeah, no, I...
Dude, please do that this week. Go up to some stranger and go, I want to be your friend. Kyle.
I really respect you, and I want to be your friend, Kyle.
Way to sell it.
All right, I gotta pick something out here. NXT UK. You know what? I kind of actually enjoyed this Heritage Cup match.
Yeah, it was fun, but it was like, I like Noam Dar. And yeah, I like the heel versus heel dynamic and Noam Dar and Wolfie. I think Wolfie is a fun character to watch at times.
He makes a good underdog, right? Yes. Like there's like something endearing about Wolfie that like he can be kind of an instant baby face and he works as sort of like this underdog sort of guy. No, I liked that. Otherwise, NXT UK, absolute nothing show this week.
I'm here for Ginny and Mako though.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm here for that. I think Ginny is an underappreciated asset. Not as underappreciated as Kaylee Ray these days, who is persona non grata on any show. Perhaps not even as underappreciated as Toni Storm, 2 minutes in. Let me do a quick aside about this. Yes, 2 minutes for... for Zelina Vega and Toni Storm. And Toni Storm is doing the most cringe child of the 80s reference heavy thing that they can do. Her mom liked 80s rock and roll. So all she's going to do is make 80s references, which, hey, look, I love me some 80s references. It's just, and then Liv Morgan and Carmel, not only They were originally supposed to be the historic first match of the Queen of the Crown tournament, or whatever the hell they're calling this. But that went, what, a minute and some seconds? And while I like Carmella, Liv needed something. If I'm ever going to take her seriously again, and it keeps on looking like they build her up and they just cut her knees out from under her every single time. I'm not the biggest Liv Morgan fan, don't get me wrong, but if you see something in her, do something with her.
Yeah, that's like, it's weird. I don't know that I see anything with Liv Morgan, but clearly there is some sort of internal struggle where there are some people who do see something with Liv Morgan making decisions backstage and other people who do not feel the same way. And like, it's just weird to see it play out with her week to week, basically.
And while we're on this, just I'll use this for mine. I have a few other notes on here for other things, but the Dana Brooke segment on Raw. Look, I know that. Here's the problem. I can't separate the fourth wall from this. I can't separate this being Vince McMahon, quote unquote, sending a message on commentary, or it being part of an angle, the kind of which never gets over. The you're a loser, you suck. It either ends up being she gets a win, but then it never culminates in anything, or she gets a repackaging, which makes her look stupid. It never ends up turning into, say, Bayley in NXT, which was done well, where she went on a losing streak and then she had to beat the other horsewomen to get to Sasha Banks, to get to Brooklyn, which was really well done. They're never going to do that kind of thing with Dana Brooke. So this, look, I get that. Like, I remember Lanza had a nice diatribe about this, about how in real sports, they criticize the people all the time, but that's a real sport, where people are doing real things as opposed to a predetermined type of choreography. And it's one of those things where I don't know.
I mean, there's also a certain way that commentary is done in real sports that all of us who follow the business with any degree of closeness know that commentary is not like that, especially not in WWE's product. Like, you aren't just given 5 to 7 minutes to vent it out. This is not, you know, if you're watching WCW in the 1990s on the B show and Bobby Heenan's on commentary, yeah, he might just do like a, you know, a piss take on somebody for 5 minutes in like an inconsequential match, and he'll just like crap on some like mid-card talent. Sure, you might actually get that on a show like that. Ventura, same way. You're not going to get that on a WWE show because Vince is monitoring everything. So when you get this sustained, Dana Brooks is underperforming, she's not living up to expectations, she seems like she's got a lot of talent, but where is it in the ring? Those are commentary notes, and those commentary notes come from a certain direction.
Yeah.
Joe Gacy and Ikemen Jiro.
Have you fallen in love with Joe Gacy yet?
Oh, yeah. He really speaks to me, Jeff.
He's a generation.
He really does. It's like they don't really know what they're doing with this gimmick because, like, frankly, most of the people who watch WWE television are millennials or older. So making your heel character a millennial, like, who is this Gen Zer who is coming to beat up Joe Gacy? Spoiler, they apparently have not settled in on that yet, which is why he's going up against other millennials like Ikemen Jiro. And Jiro's guy who, I think this character is a little too goofy, but I could almost see this character working for WWE's audience. But
wait, what is his character? Guy who wears jacket?
And he likes to have fun, Jeff.
You son of a... Let's see how it plays out.
You just got to see how this stuff plays out.
Oh, you should have done Canny for that for me.
Yeah. Canny loves Ikemen
Jiro. He loves to have fun. Oh, I almost dropped an expletive on this show when you told me that. I was so mad when you said that. Because that's his gimmick is guy who wears jacket who has who has
likes to smile fun. And have a good time.
Yeah, that's a winner.
I like to smile. I like to have a good time.
I hate both. I hate fun and I hate smiling.
I know. Trisha tells me.
Wow.
Your turn.
Arn Anderson. We have heightened the ridiculousness of this angle, and I loved every second of it. He is in Cody's backyard like a hobo with a trash can fire going for no explicable reason. Somehow has gotten a hold of some of Cody's clothes. To make this even more ridiculous and more fun, Cody is relaxing at home in a three-piece suit because it's after 8 o'clock. And what is he, a farmer? To quote the great Jack Donaghy from 30 Rock. We see him up at the upstairs. I was like, I almost thought it was a mistake at first. And then he comes outside. Arn, what are you doing? I'm just burning your clothes. So Cody comes down. And Arn just starts reading him the riot act about getting soft and all this other stuff. And then the one thing I loved was the asking for that ridiculous pink tie. Because that's such the douche move to have a pink tie like that. And I wanted Cody to say something like, you know, this is a Father's Day present for my kid. You know, my daughter gave me this, or whatever. The slap in the face was kind of cool. It's obvious, though, from Cody's social media, at least he's going to play it up, that he's never turning heel. He's going to be a heel against some people because he's just going to be booed by the AEW fans. He's going to be a babyface against some people, I guess. But Arn's ridiculousness in this segment, after talking about pulling a gun, of course he's setting fires in trash cans in the backyard. He just happens to be in the back, Cody Rhodes' backyard, hanging out.
Cody, come out. Come. Oh, now you notice me. Now that I'm burning stuff in your backyard.
He needed a boombox playing In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel.
Like, when Cody comes down, I want Arn to be like, Cody, I've been watching you sleep for the last 3 nights. Haven't you noticed?
Hold on. Who is he? What? Max Katie from Cape Fear? He's on the fence. Just why there's fireworks going on in the background.
I mean, we think that the character turns with Cody. What if Arn is going like late aged and crazy? He now watches you while you sleep. He burns fires of your things in your backyard. He pulls the Glock out in traffic.
He's Michael Douglas and falling down. He's just lost it. Hey. I just want Oli to cross in the bed and go, dude, I thought I was crotchety and cranky. What have you become? Yeah, I don't know. It was weird because I watched this sketch and I liked it. And then I watched the first 15 minutes of Roads to the Top. And I absolutely hated myself for watching it because QT Marshall goes on this rant about how wrestling is like sex. And it was the most uncomfortable thing I've ever watched. As I watch QT comparing men climaxing to, yeah, can you see Chris's look right now? I can't. If I could get this on audio, I would, but I can't. You have anything else?
Not on that. Arn Anderson likes to watch you sleep. Indy Hartwell and Mei Ying. Boy, this was. This is actively not good.
What is going on with Mei Ying? Is she just, are they going to phase out this character too? Because we got Xia Li. Maybe they bring her up for Xia Li on the main roster. Good Lord. Because that's going to be some interesting stuff right there, how they treat Xia Li up there.
I know. I'm actually kind of baffled that Xia Li is getting a main roster call up given how her developmental run has gone. She has. To me, like, if developmental was like a college course, she did not pass developmental. She very clearly needs to retake this course and try again. I would not want to be in the ring with her when she's throwing those kicks, because those kicks have a lot of force behind them and not as much accuracy.
I agree. I mean, ask Mercedes Martinez, who can take that. She's going to be in the ring with people who might not be able to take it, though. That's the thing. Is she on the Raw or the SmackDown roster? Remind me.
I thought she was going to Raw.
I think she's going to Raw. And, man, Zelina Vega takes one of those kicks. That could be trouble right there. But this is their move with international talent. They cast. Remember, this is a casting agency, so they're casting for type. They think Jinder Mahal and Veer and Shanky are going to expand their Indian audience. They thought Nakamura would expand the Japanese audience.
Oh, Veer might. Look at China. They're gonna have to repackage Veer a little bit, but like Veer,
I actually,
you know, when you said they broke up Veer from Shanky, obviously pushed Shanky to the moon, main event Shanky. But Veer, he's a major league baseball, but also like they did do that extended match with Veer a couple of weeks ago on Raw, and like he wasn't
a little
bad.
Out of control on the Fez press, but I thought that was kind of cool at the same time. It looked like he was really throwing his body and it got a little excited. And I know they don't like excitement. They want you to be able to do the same thing over and over again and be safe. But there was a lot of cool energy there that I liked out of him. And I think, they're never going to make him anything, but at the same time, you know, but
he might get this guy seems like a classic candidate for a repackage.
Back to the point, Xia Li is being put up there to hopefully expand Chinese interest.
Yeah. That would be the hope.
Maybe she'll invade Taiwan for the first English.
WWE signs their first Taiwanese talent.
All of a sudden, Xia Li's been recalled for some reason. Why is that? I will give WWE kudos for this booking. I think this is going to be in Saudi Arabia, unfortunately, but they finally did a proper use of Hell in the Cell. Edge, Seth Rollins should be Hell in a Cell. If you break into my house, I want the most vicious match you could possibly give me to do it. Good on you. If you didn't do a pay-per-view that just absolutely killed the stipulation, this would have been the best move they had done all year in terms of building a match to an actual stipulation type thing, I think.
Yes, I agree. I think that this was earned. They did a nice job building this. I'm not white hot on this particular angle, but I'm hotter on this angle than my next Lazy River topic here, which is the Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar feud. Which, I have completely lost the thread on the Heyman week to week at this point. I know Roman's mad at Heyman, but I'm not even sure why anymore.
He's testing Heyman's loyalty is what he's doing, I believe.
I feel like we've been doing that for weeks now.
Now, what do you think the end game here is? Who do you think Heyman's actually with?
I don't think that the writing has decided that yet, which is what makes this boring. I don't know that it's actually decided. And the way they've been writing it, I'm not actually getting a clear clue.
You think they're hedging?
I think they've been writing this in a hedge format. Like, this is like Who Shot Mr. Burns, where they can reveal that it's Maggie Simpson at the end.
Well, the funny thing is, it feels to me like he's going to end up with neither, because neither guy is going to trust him. And it's like, well, then what do you do with Heyman? You fire the guy? You can't fire the guy. I say put him with Bayley, but they're never going to do that.
He picks up Drew McIntyre.
Oh, God. Actually, you know what? I'm going out on a limb here. I think Drew McIntyre wins King of the Ring, even though he's not entered in it. Listen to this, because look at the I'll use this as a Lazy River topic. What the hell? Look at the board there. What I think you're going to get that Xavier Woods hope spot, possibly. I think he wins, and I think Kofi probably beats Jinder, but I don't know that for a fact. Jinder might win that match against Kofi. And I think if he does, I think Jinder ends up taking out Xavier somehow. And then they need a replacement. And I think Drew ends up being a replacement. And then they can do the whole King of Scots thing with the sword and the crown and the imagery and stuff. Because I think on the other side, I'm not sure who's going to get queen, but it's either going to be Natty or Shayna. And someone made a good point to me this week that might not be Shayna, because she is openly gay, and they may not like that in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So Brian might be natty. So I think it might be a baby face on the men's side, and it might be King Drew McIntyre.
I mean, I think that this means
we
that
stopped our panel.
No, this is the year that I think Natty gets that big push. Why?
I mean, I like Natty.
I'm joking.
But
I don't think that that's happening. I think that like if they do that with her, it will be this absolutely perfunctory one night. She's the Queen of Hearts, and now she's the Queen of the Ring, and then we never remember it. Or maybe it's some final accolades.
You know
or
what?
Like, thank
it's,
you,
it,
Natty.
Oh, that's what it is. It's the thank you, Natty. So she can be first and go down in history.
Yeah.
For a ceremonial title that they eventually turn into a comedy gimmick all the time. So
yeah, right. I mean, this, you
Queen
know,
Tamina. It's like, okay.
Right. I know. Like if it wasn't Natty, like Zelina Vega is the absolute type of person who would get the Queen of the Ring gimmick. And it's not for any good reason. So Leo Rush's new gimmick, I think, is a bit convoluted and hard to follow. And
talking
like
junk bonds this week. Come
yeah,
on.
I it's just it's like too much, man. It's too much. It's beyond Cameron Grimes. like you know, Cameron Grimes is like made money on GameStop. Okay, like people know about the GameStop story.
I'm angry about Cameron Grimes cock blocking our friends. I don't want to do that anymore on TV. Thank you very much. But please continue with Leo Rush.
I'm glad that we're now settling back into like more of the man of the hour stuff, and it seems like Leo's sort of easing off of Stock Talk with Leo Rush. And we're getting back to like the man of the hour and that sort of thing.
It's such a, the segment on Rampage with him and Dante Martin and I'm going to call him, I almost call him by his WWE name. What's his Matt Sydal.
Yeah. I was going to call him Matt Bourne, but it's
Sydal. I almost call him Matt Bourne. He is not Matt Bourne. Maniac Matt Bourne. Not nearly enough cocaine in him to be Matt Bourne. The original Doink, for those of you who don't know who Matt Bourne is, or Big Josh from WCW time, if you will. Hey, you need to prove yourself. Go out there against CM Punk. It's like, okay, I'll do it. It's like, they made Sydal look like such a doofus in that segment, where it's obvious Leo Rush is going to be a heel. Although I like the idea of Top Flight and Leo Rush as a trio. I do. I think that'd be kind of cool. Although it's a little too close to what they did with Private Party and Matt Hardy. Because I think you'd have to turn Top Flight heel. And it's like, God, we just end up turning all these guys heel when Top Flight should be super over Rock and Roll Express style baby faces, in my estimation.
I'm back too. Okay.
Save the rest of my recording, damn it. Where did I cut off with you? Okay, I'll just go into part of that rant and see if I can edit it. If you're hearing this twice, it's because Zoom, the Chinese, hated that I made a joke about Xia Li, so they shut down Zoom. And now I was talking about Top Flight.
It's my hope to get the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to come after me a little bit later. They tend to be a bit more hands-on with their approach.
Oh, you don't know the Chinese government. I was talking about Top Flight and Leo Rush and the idea that they might be a trio down the road, which I think is cool. But at the same time, it's a little too close to Private Party and Matt Hardy. And I don't think you want Top Flight to be heels. I think they're a good Rock and Roll Express style fiery babyface team. It's just that Sydal looks like such a doofus in this angle, where it's like Leo's playing him like a fiddle, and it's obvious he's playing him like a fiddle, and he's just acting like a stupid babyface, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the problem too, I think, with Sydal is that like we know he's a veteran, so it's like it makes him seem like actually like purely stupid, not naive, but like dumb. Like, you've been around the block, dude. You don't know better. And I tend to think like Leo Rush's more natural fit would be with the Acclaimed, right?
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad team either.
No, it wouldn't.
The three of them. I still think he ends up with the Men of the Year. I think that feels like a natural fit as well.
Man of the Hour at the Men of the Year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I used my last thing, which was the joke about Cameron Grimes and that thing. Do you have anything else?
Let me see here. Rhea Ripley and Nikki Ash stink. This is a tag team that's got nothing to it. It will not have anything.
Hold on. We think it's nothing because we are fans and we hate stupid stuff. Is this a WWE gimmick that's getting over? That's the question.
Is Nikki, I go back and forth. Is the Nikki Ash character actually over?
I don't know.
Because
she got booed on this singles run when she was doing that with the title. But in this, you know, in the RK girl, RK Rhea, whatever we're going to call this, it's basically RK bro, but with the women. Is it getting over? Is Rhea actually helping her get over here with her being the put upon straight person for Nikki?
I feel like it's not actually helping Nikki get over that, but the Nikki's not dying because she's Rhea's buddy, but like, the character is that the Nikki Ash character is annoying and slightly deluded, and Rhea Ripley is the down-to-earth, grounded, straight person.
Yeah. I'm ready to wrap it up if you are.
Let me see if there's anything else that I want to hit on.
There's nothing pressing for me.
God, this Goldberg angle stinks. I don't care. But, you know, he's going to Saudi Arabia, which, you know, if you wanted to kill somebody, Saudi Arabia is a good place to do it.
What's wrong with us this week? Oh, we'll end there. Follow me at CrapGame13. You follow Chris at DWATG. We'd like to thank MyBookie. Use code ROPES. Double your deposit. If you just want to follow the show, at ShakeThemRopes, all one word. I basically retweet when the YouTube video gets out there because that's usually quicker. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling family. You can watch the show and how we video and just the looks we give each other when we say weird things from time to time at youtube.com/voicesofwrestling. DWATG stands for Don't Worry About the Government. That's Chris's other passion project. Chris, tell us about your podcast, please.
Yeah. Hey, if you want guitar lessons, you can get guitar lessons. Get guitar lessons like the stars. Hit me up at DWATG. You can get the reasonable, I listen to Voices of Wrestling price, which is a slight little discount, a little listener discount. Hit me up at DWATG. You can go to patreon.com/DWATG to check out Don't Worry About the Government. I just taped a 75-minute monologue show here on Wednesday where I cover, Jeff and I were talking about China and Taiwan. I do a whole seg on China and Taiwan, talk about the budget bill and COVID-19, the vaccine. The anecdote I didn't do earlier in the show because I thought it was like a little too political. You can hear that there. It's like, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes or whatever. So you can get all of that over at patreon.com/DWATG or on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. Subscribe to Don't Worry About the Government there.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.